This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Oh, good afternoon, everyone, near and far. And we have someone who's joined us today. So let's go around with our names. I'm Carolyn.
Judy.
Jerome.
Marika.
Way. Allison?
Jamie?
Bill.
Chuck?
Curtis?
Pamela?
Emily?
Wonderful you could come. Yes. Say goodbye to one part of your family and hello to another. Great. And also our friends who are joining us online. Welcome Don and Kaveh. And I think it's Peter who'll be here. And also sometimes when we go around doing kinhin, I see people are joining us at different parts of the day, which is very lovely. Just glance at the big screen occasionally and see people are practicing with us early in the morning, mid-morning sometimes. So that's a wonderful advantage of the technology we have. So continuing on with our discussion about the precepts, the positive and negative precepts, we'll begin today. When we're deep in sesshin, and everyone is just doing so well in sesshin, it seems. I just see such dedicated sitting, dedicated kinhin walking and practice cleaning and serving and noticing what needs to be taken care of. All these things that allow the sesshin to go on in this particular lineage, especially this Kobun Shino established this coming and going. People could come and go as their needs allowed them, as their other commitments with family, work, etc. And allowing anyone to join and allowing everyone to participate, to learn new things and perhaps or to take different roles that help us keep the whole sesshin going on. So really lovely. So today we're talking about the second precept and the eighth, and I'll give the negative first and then launch into the positive. So the second precept is no stealing, and the eighth is covetousness, so hanging on, greediness. So these precepts for me really bring up how everything is a gift. Everything is a gift. How could we steal anything or hang on to anything? Our very life is a gift. That's a gift unbidden to us, but it is a gift to us. We are here because of the gift of immediately our mothers and father, but also many other people have allowed us to be here. Our circumstances, in other words, allow us to be here, and all the people that are part of that. So many don't have our circumstances and maybe have never heard of the Dharma, which we also have that gift, the great gift of the Dharma. But nevertheless, humans manage to be thankful and recognize that there's a gift even in very straitened circumstances, very dire situations. So I'd like to start with part of a poem and then a little story from outside our tradition. The poem is by Nazim Hikmet, who was a very well-known, famous even, Turkish-Polish poet of the 20th century, recognized worldwide and translated in many translations. He's very, if you like poetry, he's worth looking into. You can find him many places online or in bookstores. So I'd like to read just a section of his poem on living. He was active politically, very active, and was in prison for his activity in Turkey in the early 20th century. So this section of his poem, it's rather long, says, let's say we're in prison and close to 50, and we have 18 more years, say, before the iron doors will open. We'll still live with the outside, with its people and animals, with its struggle and wind. I mean outside beyond the walls. I mean however and wherever we are, we must live as if we'll never die. So when I read this poem by Hikmet, it brought to mind a story of another very well-known figure who was in prison for a long time. I've forgotten how many years. Nelson Mandela, and how even prison was a gift for him. He showed his gratitude and his respect for others, which is what our precepts are discussing as well, by becoming friends with his jailers, and particularly one jailer he became quite close with, and this man spoke at his funeral. So no matter where we are, wherever we are, however we are, there's recognizing the gift that's our life, and in our case, in the Dharma. So giving, it's also the first paramita, the first of six actions of the Bodhisattva, and of anyone who wants to take them up, actually. They are basic human ways that we can live and keep opening ourselves. So Dogen, of course, has a wonderful teaching on this called the Bodhisattva Shishoho, the four integrative methods of the Bodhisattva. And the first addresses this, not coveting, not being greedy. No matter how insignificant the gift, if the intention is genuine, that's giving, not taking. Trust is part of giving for Dogen, as long as the intention is genuine. He says in his illimitable way, trusting birds and flowers to their lives. Another thing that's a gift for us, this whole planet that we inhabit, live on, all the other creatures that are here are gifts. And giving transforms lives is one of Dogen's major points in this teaching. He says, one person came and presented a handful of sand to the Buddha. But because he was very genuine in his offering, this is all I have, but here it's for you. This Dogen tells a story that he became a king later. Kind of royal giving is another expression from another tradition. No thought of self or other when giving. When giving, there's no thought of self or other. It's just spontaneous. Here, I see you. Want to have part of this cookie or whatever it is, small or large. I think we taste the gladness when we give like that. We feel that joy in our hearts when we just give something to someone. So the eighth precept is, in the positive sense, freely giving of oneself and sharing understanding. So giving one's time, non-attachment, non-clinging to what we know, not saving it up for ourselves, sharing resources, sharing what we have. It's another aspect of giving. But they're all important enough to have become precepts in our tradition. So looking at these different aspects of what giving is and what not stealing is, in a way, not being covetous or greedy, that's the negative part of that, is sort of setting oneself apart. This is mine. I, me, mine. So there's kind of a non-attachment and a not-self when we're not withholding. So another part of giving is receiving. And receiving is often not valued as much in our culture as it is in other cultures. So one form of receiving is asking for help, if you need help. We're such an individualist culture that we often think we have to do it all ourselves, or want to do it all, or that we can't really ask for help and receive help when we need it. So that's a certain knowing when we need help. That's a real deep self-knowing. So, and of course, gratitude is another part of giving. The joy and that happiness arise when we give, and that gratitude arises as well. Oh, from Shakyamuni Buddha, no one is so worthy as love and compassion as oneself. So that's interesting how we talk about self and self and not self. So, and the true self and the large self, or the Buddha nature self, and the small self. But all giving, and therefore not stealing, and not being attached, not clinging to what we have, is starts with feeling that we are worthy of love and compassion for ourselves, because we contain both the large self and the small self. we live in all these worlds. So I'd like to end today with a poem from Dogen. Which is about receiving the outside world. Everything is a gift, receiving everything. And this is called encountering sound without separation, where the large self and the true self and the small self come together. At the very time when my ears hear the voice as it is, everyone I talk with is my friend. So I thank you for your attention and left some time for you all to speak if you like. That's always it's always good to share. It's a kind of giving, actually. Some of us don't like to speak as much, and others do. So that's speech. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, but that's a good place to also look at giving, receiving, not taking, and not withholding. Okay. Mariko.
I have two questions, actually. Thank you so much for your talk. One, I just wanted to clarify, you were saying that self-love is attached, self-love is more evident when you don't hoard things. So the act of hoarding things is because you don't have self-love?
Yes, it's a kind of feeling inadequate, and it's a kind of feeling that you are not, well, it's not being in touch with your worth and not trusting your worth, and that can come about from many complex circumstances. It's usually a conditioning, but that people get imprinted very early on, but can come about from other reasons too. It can come about later in life, but it is, yes. So when you call, it's nothing I'm not saying, and I don't know if this is what you meant, but I'll go on a bit, not saying that collecting things or appreciating beautiful things or having beautiful things is, that's not about being hoarding, or it's about, you know, really not sharing what you have.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And then my second quick question was, I'm wondering if you can elaborate more on the big mind versus the small mind, or big self versus small self.
Thank you.
The end of your talk.
Yeah. So, in order to exist in the world, we need to have a sense of self, and it has to be fairly solid as well. I mean, otherwise, if we don't, then people are often very they're lost, kind of, in a way, and even to the point of being put in institutions or, you know, getting diagnoses that if we don't have a sense of self, it's something that a friend who's a psychotherapist, psychologist, talks about sometimes, a Dharma friend who you know, seeing people whose self-worth is, it's somehow not, they don't understand who they are. So they, in their actual corporeal body, in their body and in their mind. So we have this, and we also have this larger sense of, which is what we practice attuning to, of being that we're not just, like when we're little kids, we're open and then we get kind of socialized. And then there are periods when it's all about me. It's all about my and mine. I spoke the other day about children when they're very small, infants, automatically share and smile. But then you go through the phase when, no, that's my toy. And not every kid does. So that's why it's some people seem to just have that, whatever reason, that feeling that they have to hang on to things, even as very small children. Thank you. Bill.
So I just had to share briefly, since you mentioned Nelson Mandela and his death. I remember, and maybe others in this room do as well, I remember being in Sishin, and it must have been Ruhatsu Sishin, although I can't say for sure, and coming out and checking the news and seeing that Mandela had died. So for what it's worth, who knows, maybe he actually died on Ruhatsu Day. I don't remember the precise day. Sad day, but I think he lived to be in his 94 or something. So that's it. I just had to share that.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Does anybody else remember that?
Well, I don't remember being on Sashin at that time. Yeah, I do remember whenever anyone who's like that, who's known around the world, let's say, dies in, you know, and who has been an example no matter what tradition they're in, no matter where they come from, just that showing the true self, the big self, the and Nelson Mandela was one, Desmond Tutu was another, Martin Luther King, another there, and of course there are others historically, many, Mother Teresa, who, you know, that does make an impression on one, make a sadness, oh, that figure is gone just last week, or maybe 10 days or 2 weeks ago now. Thich Nhat Hanh died, another, and in a Dharma sense, in a Dharma world, another really, a person who showed many people the way to be, even if they didn't necessarily practice with him or, you know, or follow him. But just the things that he said, the things that he did, his actions, were impressed many people. I remember being, I was not studying the Dharma when he, I can't remember exactly, so my, as one gets older, one's timelines sort of merge together. You know, so what date was that? Was that 1968 or was that whatever? But so that when he, I remember when during the Vietnam War era, when he was just showing up and show in this country and making and other places in the world and advocating for peace, addressing Congress. I mean, I remember being very impressed by that. Here's this man who comes from this country that our country is destroying, basically, and he's making this making these saying these things that hoping to convince people, you know, courage was one thing that I also respected, standing up and saying things to the powers that be who had basically the power over his country. So yes, people who have those big hearts and big Buddha selves, Buddha natures, does make an impression. Thank you. Allison.
Thank you for mentioning receiving. Because it's something I also practice with myself and with others that I work with. And I think in a helping profession, we tend to cling to the role of the helper and the giver and forget that giver, receiver, and gift arise together. And if we overgive, it seems to me that that's a form of stealing. I can steal from another, their agency, their ability to do something, and also the joy that you described of giving a gift. If we're not the receiver sometimes, we're taking from another person the joy of being the giver, even if it's a very small gift. Thank you very much for lifting that up.
Thank you, Allison, and also especially for your what you brought up about how it's if you don't receive, it's in a way taking someone's agency away from them. If in a way it's not letting them show their generosity, show their giving nature. So thank you very much. Curtis.
Sort of in the same vein as what Alison was asking, what's your experience with balancing self-care with the feeling of selfishness?
Well, it's a good question. Self-care, the balance of self-care and selfishness. So that's, we have to see that for ourselves, and our culture is all about kind of selfish self-care. You know, I have a name that came immediately to mind, but I'm trying to be right speaking and not calling out any public figures, which not maybe all of you know of this figure anyway, but this figure's come across my life. I mean, just reading about this figure. So there's an emphasis on, you know, you deserve it. And it's commercial. It's almost always commercial. You know, you deserve it. And the way you get what you deserve is buy this, you know, or sign up for this, sign up for this course, or things like that. So it's something to be aware of, and it's something each of us has to tune into, the sense of like, of asking, well, am I really? And so it's always hard to answer these questions or talk about this because it does depend on the context, and it's when you use language, it set up the dualism of how you're not trying to analyze really, but just do I really need this? I mean, I did a practice for in my early practices of Buddhism, I did a practice for a couple or 3 years of just asking, well, do I need to do this? So just whatever it was, whether it was buying something or looking at something or reading something, or do I need to do this? Do I need this? And then the practice of, and following, so it was a kind of a two-part practice of renunciation, of just holding things in abeyance. I mean, I didn't say, well, you, no, you can't have it. I said, just hold it in abeyance and see, you know, a day later, a week later. I mean, usually it disappears so quickly about. But on the other hand, and here I'm more with Allison, you know, that this is my training with family training and stuff, was that you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't take care of yourself in that way. You should always be doing for others, you know, which is how people burn out. Joan Halifax, Roshi Joan Halifax of Upaya Zen Center in New Mexico, she has a whole book on that that's quite standing on the edge, right, Allison? I think it is. And she has spent a lot of her practice life and her life even before she became a Buddhist practicing with the helping professions. And she talks about burning out and what causes burning out is not taking care of yourself. So again, it's kind of wise discernment that we each follow or try to tune into. So thank you. Pamela.
I'm interested in the thread here about giving, and I think it's not unusual to really enjoy giving. Like, it's really a pleasurable thing to share everything, just to naturally, spontaneously share. It just feels so good, as you mentioned. And I'm also aware that there maybe is a little undercurrent around that. I noticed this morning when Giroux had the stone behind his back that I went over to, you know, help him with his posture. And I had such affection for him that at the end I had my hands on his shoulders and for a moment I wanted to kiss his head. Thankfully, I stopped myself. But there was this feeling of like, oh, you know, like that, like there's, and I worry a little bit about it. I mean, I know how to stop. I know how to pause, thankfully. But I wonder about that in the Bodhisattva path, because it does feel very intuitive and natural, you know, again, with appropriate pausing. But, you know, I'm not sure I know how to pull that reel in exactly yet about how to stop giving and keep giving. Because I feel like I was noticing if I built a fire a couple times today and I was thinking the wood and thinking, yeah, I want to burn up like that. Just let it all go. But can't be going around kissing people on the head in the Zendo. So I wonder if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, thank you for starting that fire. I do. It's a little like, it's kind of the reverse of what Allison brought in. It's like you, if you're over giving, you're taking away someone else's, you know, agency too. Maybe, you know, and it's spontaneous and you just want to do that, but maybe the person spontaneously doesn't want to have somebody come up and say, you know, it's different with Giroux had the stone behind, so you knew he wanted something. But so a question is, especially if this is a concern. And thank you for sharing your interest in this for yourself, your practice with us, is to maybe every now and then wonder, what is this motive? What, or where is this coming from? You know, where is this? But in that, and so it's a little before you actually stop doing it, as you know, where is this coming from? And it, again, not to analyze it. And if you're that kind of person, then of course there'll be many who likes to give, and there'll be many occasions to. But as you brought up, you also wonder about this. It's a little piece of the self, I think, or being recognized, being, so it's maybe not so respectful sometimes of other people's space and their being. It's just more about what you feel. Anyway, these are all these things that we look at, and we're all doing it in one form or another, and we have different areas where we specialize, right? but it's well, I kind of lost my thread of thought there, but the precepts are, it's about what we're doing with the precepts, because we at some point recognize our Buddha nature, whether we know it or not. Even people who come here and listen recognize something is bigger than their worldly solid self. And then we're looking into, well, you know, the world we live in, you know, how does that all work? And recognizing, so opening up that smaller self to the larger self.
Giving feels like you're opening up to the larger self, mm-hmm. to me.
Mm-hmm. Pardon? I didn't quite hear it.
Yeah, I would like to go ahead and share that too.
Okay.
It feels like when it is really truly coming from the larger self, there's no burnout.
That's true.
It feels like it's giving, feels to me like it's coming from that 99% of the time. Just like, take it, else I'd have to stop baking bread.
Well, then then you don't really have a concern.
It's a lot of bread.
if it's genuine and there's no burnout, then there's nothing to worry about. So,
thank you.
No. So, unless there's another burning question from someone, it's Jiro.
I could just add a refinement on this giving and receiving. In Japan, sometimes, you know, whenever you go somewhere, you have to take a gift to the host. So the gift giving is very common in Japan. But the problem is that if you receive a gift, then that obligates you to give something back sooner or later of the same value. So one way to get around that is that when someone offers something to you, you just say kimochi dake itadakimasu, meaning I'm very happy just to receive the spirit of your gift. So you can refuse it, and I think we could just keep that in mind as receivers. Sometimes we would like to receive it, but I mean, we like the energy that is behind it, but we, for whatever reason, we can refuse it by speaking in this way. Thank you, but I'm just happy to receive the spirit of your gift.
Thank you, Jiro. That's a beautiful response. And I'm sure many of us have been in that place where we, you know, in our culture, it's hard to refuse gifts, and then we end up with things that, you know, maybe we don't want, or maybe we can give them away. There is a little movement that started re-gifting, but that phrase, that is really beautiful. Just if you really, oh, I'm really happy to receive the spirit of your gift. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.